Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It is the first hour of the Garden Hotline on this Saturday morning. I'm Scott Jagow, along with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, here to answer your questions. The number to call, that's the Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Welcome back, Michelle.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back.
It's mid-June. Unbelievable.
I know.
And actually, in about a week, it's going to be technically summer.
Yep.
People are already talking about summer. But fun fact, we still haven't had 90 degrees this year yet.
Is that right?
Yep. We've been close this past week. This week, look at that. Look, the highs are like 88, 88, 89, 86, 88. We may not make it.
We're skirting that line.
We
I like it.
We might not make it to 90 until actual summer.
I'm kind of into that.
And then it's going to be 136 degrees for the whole month of July.
Yeah, we've actually had, I mean, if you're thinking back throughout this year, we have had some really mild temperatures so far. I think we've had a few little spells where we've had some heat, but recently it's felt like an actual springtime here.
It's been really a great spring temperature-wise. Again, I have a feeling we're going to be smacked in the face with heat very soon,
yeah,
which always happens. But the longer it goes without hitting that 90 mark, it's nice because you do get some days that are very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Even the humidity being bad isn't terrible if it's 86 degrees versus 98.
Yeah, I'm definitely here for it. It's been a lot more comfortable, especially, you know, like I'm a gardener. I think all of our listeners are gardeners, and it's so much more tolerable outside. You can stay outside a little bit longer, especially during those daytime hours, and get some extra weeding done without dying of heat stroke. So.
Yeah, and in actuality, that is a serious concern when it gets really hot to be out in the heat that long.
Oh, for
while
sure.
You're doing gardening, you know, stressful activities or stress on your body in high temperatures. But aside from that, the fact that we've had cooler temperatures in the spring than normal, does that make a difference in anything?
Yeah, I mean, we're actually seeing a lot of, because we've had a lot of rain and a lot of like kind of cooler temperatures and even a little bit of some fluctuating temperatures at times, we are seeing a whole lot of fungal issues out in the world, you know, on everything really, and all kinds of pest and disease issues. But fungus is really becoming an issue. And for the most part, fungal issues are just aesthetic. They're not necessarily like something that's going to kill your plants. It really just looks bad. In my own yard, Last night I was kind of piddling around, and I have fungal issues on, I feel like, everything, even, you know, from perennials, like my yarrow, that's kind of sitting in a little bit, maybe more shade than it likes, but it's really fungally and kind of dying back and melting away at the crown. I have some lamb's ear that's kind of doing the same thing. I have peonies that have some powdery mildew. I think almost all of my trees have some kind of fungus, like anthracnose or something like that. But for the most part, all of these fungal things are, you know, just aesthetic, and we don't really do a lot to treat those. We kind of clean up the anything that falls off or anything that looks bad, and just kind of hopefully wait till it flushes back out once the heat gets here. But also a lot of pests and disease, you know, a lot of bugs are happening right now, which I didn't know when I was going to get into gardening or horticulture that I was going to have to learn about so many bugs, but it is definitely a big part of what we're seeing right now.
The fungal thing, is that mostly related to the precipitation?
Yeah, I mean, it's weather, and it's all the weather. It's precipitation. We have a lot of rain that's happening, and it a lot of times it happens in, you know, places where we have morning shade and we have all that water sitting on our leaves or at the crown of plants, and it doesn't dry out because it's just been so wet. It doesn't get a chance to dry out as quickly, so it just kind of sits around in there and the fungus grows. So yeah, definitely weather related on the fungus.
And in terms of the bugs, any ones in particular right now that are an issue? More so than normal?
Sure. You know, we actually, right now we're seeing a lot of spider mites, and it feels like spider mites are all over everything right now. There's aphids that are all over everything right now. So we're actually treating for those a lot when we can. You know, pesticides are a tricky thing. You know, they're bad. When you spray a pesticide or an insecticide, I think I've said this before, you are killing good bugs along with the bad bugs. So we kind of are, you know, trying to be a little bit, I don't know, cautious when we spray those. We don't typically spray something if it doesn't need it. We spray it when it becomes a really bad infestation. If it's something really light, we probably won't spray it. But because, like I said, we're killing all the bad bugs, and there are natural predators for things like aphids and the spider mites. I think we've talked about it before. There's, you know, like a ladybug larva, and ladybugs will eat the aphids. So if we're spraying to kill those, and we're actually going to kill those ladybugs as well. So it's a kind of a fine line between, you know, even with the fungal stuff, of whether or not you should spray or just let it be.
So there is no other alternative. Just letting it be is the alternative.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you can prune some things off. Like, there are some bug infestations that you can prune away. On boxwoods, they get a psyllid wasp, and it's always a wasp. But I swear, most of the pest problems we're having right now is related to a wasp. But for instance, on boxwoods, they get a psyllid wasp that lays their eggs, and their larvae kind of make the tips of your boxwood leaves curl. And we never spray for those. Those easiest way to help with that is just prune your boxwoods and clean up the debris from what you pruned off. So, you know, I have in my own yard right now, I'm having a messy, 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 messy issue with these galls on the bottom of the oak leaves. And I wasn't actually sure what? Galls. G-A-L-L-S. There's all different kinds of shapes and sizes. And a gall is basically a growth that the plant will do from, it's basically a response from an insect laying an egg. So it could be, like in my situation, there are all these teeny tiny little flat balls basically on the bottom of the leaves that are now, as the larva is hatching, they're actually called jumping wasp galls. And there are these little things that are in the bottom of the leaves, and I swear there's millions of them, and they're now all over my patio, all over my lawn furniture, all over everything at my house right now. But as the larva starts to hatch, it kind of shakes, and then the little gall will pop off of the bottom of the leaf, and it's, you know, the wasps are trying to kind of find their way down to that leaf litter on the ground and into the soil, where they kind of burrow in and overwinter, and they'll hatch as adult wasps next year. But I swear to you, when I say millions of these little teeny tiny dots all over everything, that's kind of what I'm messing around with at my house currently.
So you're saying the wasps are trying to get the leaves to come off so that they hit the ground and then...
No, they fall off. So they lay their eggs on the underside of the leaves, and then those dots fall off and fall to the ground where they're wanting to like find a home in the already fallen leaf litter or your soil. So the leaves most of the time stay on. They just look really ugly too. They just look like, my leaves look awful on my oak tree. They just have little spots all over them and they're kind of discolored and yellow, and but it's just everywhere.
Jumping wasps.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wasps. And the wasps make all kinds of issues with, especially with our trees and making different different galls, but a lot of oaks have that problem. But sometimes they're not little teeny tiny specks. Sometimes they are like the size of a golf ball. Sometimes they make these big burls on the side of a tree that you might be hiking through the woods and you see some big giant growth on the side of the tree. They're not quite sure what those are caused from, but they suspect it's from a wasp or some other kind of insect.
Okay. If you're having problems with insects or anything else in your garden or your front yard or your backyard or your side yard, Michelle is the person to answer your question. It is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline, and we'll begin taking your phone calls on KMOX 104.1 FM. It's the Garden Hotline with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, answering your questions at 314-436-7900. Let's get to those questions right now. Tom, you're up first on the Garden Hotline. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for your service. You mentioned earlier in the segment galls. I have several very mature, beautiful oak trees, older oak trees, that have been infested with thousands, ten thousands of galls that the squirrels love to eat, but also cause significant damage to the branches because of the weight of them. They break off, especially during storms, and some of them almost the size of a baseball. And I wondered if there's a way to solve it. I am constantly picking them up and removing them as yard waste, trying to keep them from getting into the soil and reproducing.
Yeah, so this is a really common issue. You know, you can drive around St. Louis and look up into a lot of different types of oak trees, and you guys will see, like I said, these galls, and they can be little, like the ones I have, and the ones I believe you're talking about are just these golf ball to even baseball size growths that are on the branches. Oftentimes they're on the very ends of the branches. And if it's a small infestation, or, you know, the first year or two of the infestation, it typically isn't even something that you might even notice. But as these infestations become larger, and over time, these trees can become like completely engulfed in the galls. And again, there are different types of wasps, but these are caused by a wasp that kind of lays their eggs inside the branch of the tree, and the tree puts on a growth. It's just a response from the tree, and inside those growths are the larvae from the wasp. And what typically happens is that they do their thing in their life cycle, and as they mature, they will fall to the ground, and then the larvae kind of overwinter and continue to do their growth cycle. And then typically in the spring, they emerge. But once that tree has put on that gall growth, there's not a lot to do. I do believe that they can do some kind of treatment for these, but it's not super effective. And I think most of the time an arborist wouldn't recommend treatment. Once you get to a stage where it's like really becoming a problem, these galls can basically girdle the branches. So it just means that they're kind of strangling the tips of the branches wherever they are. So when you strangle something, it can die. So a lot of times you can see a lot of little branches that fall off. But when you have a whole bunch of branches, especially on one limb, if you do have heavy winds or storms, then the branch can fall off. This also weakens the tree. You can see on a lot of these, as it starts strangling the tree from being around those branches, the leaves will drop, they'll become really thin. And over time, when you have a bad infestation, this can cause the tree to slowly decline and then potentially eventually die. It's a slow, slow process most of the time. A lot of times what we see is damage from those branches that are falling. It sounds like you have a lot of messiness that happens from this, and you're constantly having to pick up that debris. So I think most of the time when you have an arborist come out, you know, some people will recommend removal, and it just really depends on the stage of and how much infestation that you have. But it's the thing that you really have to think about is property damage and how much time and energy you're willing to put in kind of the messiness and cleaning up of that. You know, if it's a tree that's far out on the property and there's not a lot of risk of it falling on a house or a garage or humans or vehicles, then, you know, maybe you leave it around a little bit longer. But as far as treatment goes, I don't believe there's really much that you can do about it. They might even fertilize to help the plant just have, or the tree have, a little bit more vigor and hopefully last a little bit longer. But other than that, there's really not a lot you can do. They do deadwood a lot. So if you get a huge infestation with those gulls and you have a lot of deadwood, they can kind of prune some of that out. But not a lot you can do once you have a heavy infestation of those wasps and those gulls.
Looks like I'm going to be removing them because the infestation is so heavy that it's a daily pickup. And
yeah.
I think your point of the time and effort related to it is not worth, although they are such beautiful trees.
They're gorgeous trees, and it's a sadness. I was actually at a client property yesterday talking about this, and they have a massive oak in their backyard, and I think they're going to have to remove it. Theirs is over a garage. And I think in time, you know, there's just such a huge risk of limbs falling on their garage with their cars in it, and just their constant need for picking all of that up. It's devastating. It's a huge loss to their landscape. It's going to completely change the ecosystem back there. And you can plant new trees, and, you know, we know how long those take. And this is a really beautiful, mature oak tree, and it's a big loss when it gets to that point. So.
Any recommendations for replacements that would grow relatively fast? And this is in my front yard, close to the house, so I get it, yes.
Yeah, I love one of my favorite shade trees. It's also a native here in Missouri. It's not a super fast grower. I'd say a medium grower, but it's a black gum. It's Nyssa sylvatica. There's a couple cultivars out there, and I think the one that I see a lot is called Wildfire. Beautiful fall color, very few pest and disease issues, just a really great tree. Great for your, for a shade, for your landscape. And, not, like I said, not a super fast grower, but it's definitely worth it for your shade tree and your landscape. One of my favorites.
Thank you for your service. Really appreciate your, input.
Yeah.
Have
good
a great
luck.
Day.
Thanks for calling, Tom. 314-436-7900 is the garden hotline to ask your question of Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. Let's next go to Claudette. Good morning, Claudette.
Oh, good morning. Good morning to both of you. I did have a question which I'd like to get back to, but I wanted to continue on with the discussion that you just had. I don't know if you had mentioned this. What do you do if you have a mild infestation for the galls? This is the first year my oak tree has shown significant gall issues.
You just talk nice to it and hope that it doesn't get worse.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I know how to do that.
No, there's really, again, there's not a ton you can do with these, you know, because they're inside of like this wooden thing that the tree, it's hard to spray and penetrate that. It's almost impossible. So there's not a lot for, like, treatment-wise in order to help it. So really, once they're there, you could, you know, again, you could prune some of them out if it's a small tree and you have, like, the time and you know, pruning them out. And hopefully you're before the larva has dropped into the ground to make new babies down there. But really, again, not a lot you can do. Pruning out some of that old stuff before it gets to be a larger infestation is about it.
Can you treat the ground in any way to prevent the larvae from surviving?
That is a good question. I mean, there are insecticides out there that people use for, like, grub control and mosquito larvae and things like that. I don't know the answer to that, but I wish Glenn Kramer was here this week because he'd probably know the answer. He probably sells it. But did you have another question?
Yes, the question was actually some suggestions for what I could plant to create a lawn that is not grass.
Oh, I like this question. You're not wanting just your typical turf grass. Are you opposed to like a small, short ornamental grass, like a carex or a sedge that grows into something that looks like kind of like a turf, but you'd only have to mow maybe once a year? That's a great option that we have. There are carex pretty much for every situation, for full sun, for shade, for wet, for dry. But there are,
what was the name of that?
There are carex, C-A-R-E-X. They're also called sedges is the common name, but, there are tons of different varieties, and some that kind of will grow together like a lawn. And you really, the only thing you have to do is mow it, in the springtime before it breaks dormancy. It's a really good option. You know, there are a lot of, you know, people do clover lawns and things like that. How big of a space is it? Is it a large space?
Well, there's several different spaces. So one is that I do have dogs and I have an airing yard. So it would have to be something that could maintain itself with the abuse of dogs running around it all the time. And mm-hmm. then there is like the front yard, which is probably like a third of an acre or something, a typical Webster Groves lawn. And that my neighbors will not get upset about so it doesn't grow too tall.
Right. I think carex is a great option. Again, there's all different kind of colors and sizes and shapes, or some are just clump forming and some kind of spread. If it's full sun, that we have a grass is called buffalo grass that you only have to mow a couple of times a year, but that might be a good option for you too.
I'm familiar with buffalo grass, and it does, at least in my hands, it took a lot of work to establish it.
So yeah, and I think most of these things will take some work to get established.
I like the sound of buffalo grass.
Yeah, buffalo grass.
A couple times a year?
Yeah.
All right.
Full sun, you need full sun for it.
Okay. All right, thanks for calling in, Claudette. It is 314-436-7900. We will continue with your phone calls and questions for Michelle Reitzer West after a short break. Garden Hotline on 104.1 FM, KMOX, the voice of St. Louis. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX, the voice of St. Louis. And the number to call to talk to Michelle Reitzer West from Pointer Landscaping is 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Vera. Good morning, Vera.
Good morning. I'm calling about my magnolia tree. I planted as a small tree, and now after 50 years later, it's taller than my two-story house. But this spring, it pushed out the old leaves, but it never replaced with new leaves. And it looks very sad.
So it's a southern magnolia, or what kind of magnolia is it?
Yes, with the large leaves.
Okay. So sometimes our southern magnolias, you know, because they're southern magnolias, they like it in the south. So sometimes they can struggle through our winter. And if we think about the weather that we've had the last couple of years through our winter, we've had some drought going into our winters. And then we've had a couple of spells where we've had some really long-term wind chill issues or low temperatures. And then again, this year we had, you know, we didn't have a really bad winter, but we did have a drought going into it. And we had some time where it was a little bit colder. And then on top of that, we had February where it was super dry and warm. And in fact, February had drought conditions as well. So those kind of combinations of things have affected some of our trees, and southern magnolia is definitely one of them. So without seeing it and being there to kind of investigate further, that would be my initial thought, is that just had some winter damage, and it may not flush those branches back out. I'm hopeful that, you know, you have the rest of the tree has some leaves left, and maybe it was just, you know, some of the branches. And if that's the case, you probably need to have, you know, an arborist out to do some deadwooding and to get rid of some of those old those old dead branches where the leaves fell off, and potentially do a fertilization to help it flush back out some new leaves.
I have two other magnolias on my property
mm-hmm.
that are even older than this, and mm-hmm. they're beautiful, and they're all full of blooms now.
Yeah, and they are blooming now. It's really beautiful. If you have a southern magnolia and you haven't taken a walk out by it, it is in bloom right now. And again, some of these things, it could be those other trees might be just in a little bit different situation where they might get, you know, full sun during the winter, or they're maybe a little bit more protected. Another thing that we've been seeing a little bit of is some scale. It's another insect problem. And last year we had a lot of scale on our magnolias. I haven't noticed it yet this year, but, you know, a lot of times the issues that our trees are having right now are not from issues that are happening right now. It's from issues that happened last year or even 2 or 3 years prior. So you may have had a scale insect infestation, and you may even have it now. Have you ever noticed any kind of like white fuzzy or white dots on the branches, or even, you know, some... anything like that?
No.
So I think my recommendation is just really to call an arborist. Anytime you have a tree that's high value, it's really important to you to maintain the health and vigor of that tree. It's always super important to get a professional out, an arborist, not just some tree guy, but an arborist to come out and evaluate, because there's always stuff that can be done, like, you know, like maintenance pruning, or, you know, if it needs to have some kind of treatment or fertilization. But getting an arborist out to kind of give you a good, accurate evaluation would be my recommendation to you.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks for calling in, Vera. The number to call to ask your question this morning, 314-436-7900. That is the garden hotline to talk to Michelle about whatever you have going on in your garden or backyard. Did you want to say something else?
I always want to say something else.
Yeah, that's true.
Do we have another caller?
No, actually.
So, yeah. So just to go off of, I was just thinking about other kind of tree things that we're seeing now. You know, I had that thought when I said that, you know, so much of what's happening now to our trees isn't necessarily from something that's happening right now. It's often from previous seasons or previous issues. The drought is one of them. But another thing that we're seeing a ton of, I'm getting a lot of calls on, and I'm going out to do a lot of checks. But if you remember, about a year ago, we had that lovely cicada infestation. I know,
yes,
everybody.
I can't believe it's been a year.
Yeah, it's been about a year. I think it started in mid to late May, and it went through mid to late June. And we thought we got off easy with a lot of the cicada damage, but really some of it is just kind of showing itself right now. So I'm getting a ton of phone calls, seeing a lot of trees that are struggling from that cicada damage. And it's really, it's pretty visible before I even get out of the car. When I show up to people's houses, I'm seeing, you know, a lot of trees. Red maple is a big one. But it looks like the tips of your trees are dying, and it could just be a few branches. It could be, in some cases, you know, like it's about 12 inches or so, sometimes a little bit more, all over the tree of all the tips that are defoliated, and the tips are dead. And if you look at them, if you kind of go out and investigate on the underside of the branch, it's just a really long line of a wound from that cicada that it. If you remember from all the coverage of it, the cicada basically made a slit in the underside of the branch, and then it deposited its eggs all along that underside. And then just like these other bugs we've been talking about, that larva will drop to the ground, and then they don't overwinter. They take years to come back, but they kind of lay in the ground and do their magic until they're ready to emerge. But this year we're seeing the effects of all of that, and it's, you know, a lot of tip dieback. So you can go out there and prune it all off, which, you know, if you have the time to do, and it's not that big of a tree. A lot of this is happening, and you're seeing it noticeably on our younger trees that have smaller branching. But it also will self-prune. The tree will compartmentalize where that damage is and hopefully fall off. So if you don't have a ladder, you don't have a pole pruner, you just don't want to do it, you can leave that damage on there. It's just aesthetic for the most part, but we're seeing so much of it. And it's not from what's happening now. People think what's happening to my tree, but it's actually from last year's.
Why did it take so long?
Because it's really weird, because if you went out there and looked at it last year, it was barely noticeable, this slit on the underside of the tree. And as the larva, the eggs inside of there grew, it pushed open that wound. So the wound kept getting bigger and bigger. And then the winter came and your tree had an open wound, or a wound that wasn't completely healed. And, it died back to below where that wound was from the cicada.
Huh.
It's really cool. I know it sounds really, it's a bug, but I have pictures. I wish we had a Facebook page or something, but the pictures from last year it looked very much just like a little skinny slit, almost like you would have taken a razor blade or something and pulled it down the underside. And now it's just these big open areas where the tree's trying to heal itself, but it's just dead tissue now. So just super
those cicadas,
weird.
Man.
I hope people ate some or killed some or something, because yeah. It's causing me a headache right now. But yep, still dealing with the cicadas from last year.
All right, that's Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, answering your questions today at 314-436-7900. Now we have a bunch of phone calls to get to, but first we have a break on 104.1 FM KMOX. It's
real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's hour one of the Garden Hotline on KMOX with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, answering your questions at 314-436-7900. John, good morning. You're up next.
Hello.
Hi there. Go ahead with your question.
Okay, just had a quick question for you. So I got a couple of trees cut down in my yard, and right now I have about a 3-foot pile of like wood shavings and stuff that they ground out the stump with. Is there anything that I can use that for, or is it just better off just going in the yard waste?
You can definitely use it. I would avoid using it around other plants. So if you have any like open bed spaces that you can spread it and kind of let it dry out. If you put it around perennials or shrubs or other plants, like as it decomposes, it kind of takes all the nitrogen and out of the soil and can affect your plant growth. So definitely can be used as mulch in wide open areas, or you can kind of store it until it dries out a little bit and then use it as mulch. But other than that, I don't really know. Could be good for pathways too, if you have any pathways that you're needing to walk around or things like that. But I don't know any other uses other than that.
Okay, perfect. That's really all I needed to know. I appreciate
it. Awesome. Good luck.
Thanks for calling in, John. Let's next go to Frank. Good morning, Frank. You're on with Michelle.
Yes. I have a bed of daylilies. They're about 30 years old. And I noticed last year that we were having fewer blooms. This year I have very few blooms. Is there anything I can do to enhance the blooming of those daylilies?
Yeah, for sure. So a lot of plants like daylilies and iris that spread kind of through underground root systems or underground tubers can get really dense over time, especially sounds like you've had those for quite a while. So one of the things that you could do is to dig them up or thin out what's already there to create some space. It might be a lot of work if you have a lot of daylilies, but it will help with the overall health and definitely the bloom. When any plant gets kind of root bound or really dense, it doesn't flower as often. And then while you're at it, you could also do a soil test to make sure that that it's getting the nutrients that it needs, because, you know, over time, soil can lose some of that or pH can change over long periods of time. And that can also affect things. Again, this year and last year, we had a lot of fungal issues. I don't know if you're having any issues with like the leaves turning yellow or having any fungal issues that can also affect flowering. And then our lovely friend, the deer, can also, they love to eat the daylilies. But if they're eating your blooms, they're probably eating the leaves as well. So that would be pretty evident if it was deer damage. But I would try that if it's a really densely planted and it's just, you know, overgrown over the years. That would be my first suggestion.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Good luck.
Thanks for calling in, Frank. It's 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Bill. You're on with Michelle. Good morning. Hello, Bill. You there?
Oh, yeah. Didn't hear you. I've got a red bud that grew from a volunteer, and it's out in the full sun. And very healthy, growing very fast, but the bark near the ground is peeling off in chunks, and I was wondering if that's just something because of the fast growing rate that it's doing.
So it can be, yeah. So the cracking or peeling of the bark can be from fast growth, but it's typically not from that, especially on a really young tree. What I suspect, if it's right up against the ground, that it's some fungal issue. So what I would do is that most trees don't like to have a bunch of crowding at the base of the tree. So what I would recommend doing is pulling back all of, I don't know if you have mulch or soil up at the base, whatever it is, you want to pull all of that back. And what you're looking for when you pull that back is a root flare. So all trees naturally will be straight up and down, almost like a telephone pole, whether they're little or big. These are single stem trees, multi stem trees, all have an area. And then at the base, it will start to flare out. And it's the first set of roots. And there's, you know, typically two or three kind of top roots that you can see. So pulling that back and exposing that root flare And then keeping that area kind of dry as it's healing will be really beneficial. But it's likely just some kind of fungus that's gotten itself, or that maybe there was a wound there at the base. It could have come from like a string trimmer or anything, a small wound, and then water or bugs or something got in there. And then the moisture just keeps getting in there, and it can cause that peeling bark. So I think that's the number one thing. Just make sure that root flare is exposed, and keep that pulled back as it's growing. And even as it matures, I think that'll help to maintain the best health. And it will help that wound. If that is a wound under there or fungus that's growing, it will help that to heal itself and continue to grow well.
Well, like I said, it's otherwise it's very healthy looking, growing like crazy. So I don't know. Hey, one other subject. I've got a big oak leaf hydrangea that there's a bunch of sprouts coming up underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like late winter or whatever. Could I dig up some of those and maybe transplant some of them if they got root?
You can, yeah. And it doesn't, you can do it. I would kind of wait now because we're getting to the time of year where the heat's coming, but you could do it this fall. And you can do it late winter, early spring, but absolutely you can dig those up and make some more.
Now there should be roots.
For sure.
Small roots right near these sprouts then, right?
There will be, just make sure you get a good root ball around it. Dig up as much soil as you can, so that when you transplant it, it'll do better, but definitely can do that. I think we got to take a break. It's the top of the hour, so give us a call with your questions, 314-436-7900. You're listening to 104.1 KMOX.
It's hour two of the Garden Hotline on the Voice of St. Louis with Michelle Reeser-West. She is with Pointer Landscaping, and the number to call to ask her your question about any gardening topic is 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Phil. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. We have a 6-foot-tall page tree I planted about 4 months ago. Now we're getting some black spots and yellow leaves. Is there certain things I can spray?
Yeah, so this is common for this tree to do that. In fact, it gets a couple different kinds of fungal issues on the tree. I actually just treated mine, and I just used a copper fungicide spray. You can get that at any nursery or your big box hardware stores. But there's also a product called neem oil. That's a natural fungicide. You always have to be careful when you're spraying on fruit trees. So neem oil is a great option because it's organic. It's actually made from the neem seed. So that would be definitely something that you could spray on there. And most of the time with these types of things, if you start spraying those trees before they break dormancy, spraying the bare branches and even thinning out, as that tree grows, thinning out some of those branches, so you can get some good light penetration and air circulation that will help in the future. But maybe some neem oil would be my first step.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Phil, at 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Pam. Good morning, Pam.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a hardy hibiscus that's been in the ground for probably 10 years. It does quite well. My problem is it's expanding to the edge of the flower bed. Another year it's going to be out. I want to know, can I divide it? When and how is the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can divide those. Sometimes they're a little bit harder to divide because they're almost like woody and dense at the base. So having a nice sharp spade when you do it or some muscles, lift some weights and prep for it. Sometimes it can be a little bit more difficult. The other thing that you can do is pinch it back if you're not ready to transplant just yet. You can control the size of it by pinching it back or just with your fingertips or with a pair of pruners. It's probably a little too late to do it now. It's typically something I would do in like late April or May as it was growing. And pinching it back just will delay the bloom a little bit, but it also helps to control the size, and then it just blooms a little bit later, just sets its buds a little bit later. But that's a way to control hibiscus as well. And then I would I think you could do it in the fall. Hibiscus, you know, can be a little bit slow to emerge in the spring. I think you could do it in the fall. I would wait, I think, probably to just before it's starting to break dormancy in the spring, which is much, much later than most of our other perennials. So, you know, I'd probably say March or April even is probably a better time to do it.
Okay, great. Well, I have a comment too. That lady on her magnolia,
mm-hmm.
we took a bad hit on that first storm that came through with the hail.
Mm-hmm.
Trees were just starting to bud, and I have three magnolia trees. It knocked everything off. It took everything off of my crab apples. I had one bloom, and this is a very well-established tree. And that might have been part of her problem if she was in the right area.
Yeah, that's a great point. We've had a lot of storms and a lot of damage in a lot of areas. So great point. Thanks for the call.
Well, thank you. Bye.
Up next, we have Diane. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. I have a similar question to a previous caller. I have a forest pansy redbud, and when the tree's not very tall, however, it's older, but it just never got huge, which I like. And when you stand underneath and look at it, all of the branches underneath look either dead or they don't have any leaves on them. And the leaves that are on the tree start curling, and the bark is loose or looks like it's possibly getting ready to pop. And it was like this last year, too. And I wondered if there's anything I can do about it because I love the tree.
Yeah, so it seems like you have maybe a few things going on with the tree. You know, I am a self-proclaimed redbud hater. I think I say this all the time. I actually love redbuds in their natural elements, but they are often finicky and often very short-lived and often have a lot of problems in our landscapes. Let me see if I can remember all the things. So the dead wood that you're seeing in there, or the branches that don't have any leaves, are probably dead. It's a common thing in redbuds. They lose a lot of branching, and you typically have to do some pruning. If you want to make sure that they're dead, you can take your little pruner out there, even your fingernail, and kind of scratch the wood. And when you scratch it, if it scratches and there's green color, that means it's alive and there's a chance for it to leaf out. If you scratch it and is brown, that means it's dead and that you can deadwood that. And you can do that on a redbud or pretty much any tree any time of year. You can prune out any of dead, damaged, diseased, 3Ds. You can do any time of year. So go ahead and prune those out. And that'll kind of help the tree with with air circulation and all of that. As far as the growth goes and the stunted growth, that's interesting. How old is the tree?
Oh, gosh, I don't really know, but I would say maybe 6-7 years old.
Yeah, so, I mean, that could just be normal. It could be the soil that it's in. It could be just different conditions. You know, typically a tree, we say 3 or 4 seasons before it starts really getting rooted in. So if it's 6, you know, maybe it just hasn't quite taken off yet. So you could do a soil test and see if it needs any kind of fertilization. And then as far as the curling leaves go, this can be common. Do you get lawn care treatments? Do you get fertilization to your lawn?
No.
Okay. That's often a sign of the curling leaves. The red buds get affected sometimes by the pet or the fertilization from the lawn. This could also be a fungus that can do it. Could be leaf curl can be caused by mites. So it just would be looking at the leaves to see if it has any other indicators of a fungus, like a white color or any kind of black sootiness on the branches. And then if it were bugs, it might be that the leaves would have some like stippling marks or some little white marks on the leaves. So just kind of investigating to see if one of those things is obvious.
Okay.
And then what else? Did I miss anything else?
Well, it was about the bark. So
oh, the
would
bark.
I do the same thing as what you told the previous guy
yeah.
to pull the dirt away?
For sure.
And expose that first root that
correct.
Is showing. Right?
Yeah. So
okay.
that would be, especially if that peeling of the bark is close to the ground, that's always, it doesn't matter if your bark is peeling or not. If you have trees that have that root flare covered up, you always should take the time. Any tree, every tree wants to have that root flare exposed. One of the reasons is it can get those fungal issues. Another reason is the roots will girdle, which means they're just going to kind of spin around there and kind of choke off the tree. It could just be a long-term health problem. So always pull that mulch back and soil back from the base of the tree. But trees also naturally exfoliate their bark. Some trees will just, as they grow, or just kind of the bark changes from a smooth bark into a more scaly bark, and they can just, you know, lose some of that bark naturally. But if it's in, you know, like down by the base, or if it's exposing, you know, the bare wood underneath it, that could be an issue.
Okay. Is there a certain thing that you recommend to spray? If it is a fungus,
I don't,
with those leaves.
Yeah, I don't typically recommend spraying. A lot of times the fungus is just a seasonal thing. Like this year we talked about we're having and seeing more fungal things than normal. Most of the time it's just aesthetic. So what I typically recommend is just to clean up anything that falls off of the tree, clean up any branches that might die back from the fungus. Cause that's how the fungus spreads, is just kind of splashing around from the infected stuff to the other things. But, you can do a fungicide spray to try to help, prevent the spread, but once the fungus is there, it's there. So not always recommended to spray.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Good luck.
Thanks, Diane, for calling in at 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. We have some more calls to get to. So if you're on the line, we will do that right after a short break on 104.1 FM KMOX. It is the Garden Hotline, hour number two, with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. The number to call if you have a question this morning is 314-436-7900. Up next, we go to Jim. Good morning, Jim.
Hello.
You're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, I have two questions. I got a lilac bush that has a small tree grows in it every year, and I cut it back. Is there any way I can get rid of that tree? And this lilac bush is just overgrown. What can I do about that?
So I'm glad you asked about the lilac pruning. I was going to try to work that in today because we're kind of nearing the end of lilac pruning time. Our lilacs are going to start setting buds for next year soon. So lilac pruning should definitely be happening now and ending here in the next week or two if you can. But the overgrown lilac, I think getting in there and thinning out any of the older canes. You can take as much of a third of the shrub without it really affecting its health or causing too much stress. So you could get in there at the base where all of those things are coming up out of the ground and pick, you know, a third of those larger branches to cut all the way back down to the base. And that should help. That will reduce the size. It will open up the crown of the plant. And then if you need to do any more shaping to the top or some of the smaller branches, you can do that as well. As far as that weed tree or the tree growing up through the middle, my recommendation for you on that is to cut that back when you're pruning everything out. And when that wound is fresh, you can paint that with an herbicide. You could do a concentrated. I would do, you know, if you get a concentrated bottle of Roundup or some other weed killer at the store that you typically mix into a bigger sprayer, that concentrated form of the weed killer painted onto that stump. Or there's a product, I'm not sure if you can get it actually without a pesticide license, but there might be stores around here, places that you can get it, but it's called Tordon, T-O-R-D-O-N. And that's a herbicide that works really well on woodies. And basically when you make that fresh cut, you can paint on that herbicide and the tree will take all that down into the root system and hopefully die back. But as it grows, it's important to, you know, just cutting it back isn't going to kill most of these weed trees. They're just going to keep growing. But when you cut it, just freshly put some herbicide on there and it should be fine.
Well, not the greening of the flower thing. That's really tall, you know what I'm saying? I mean, these things are over 6 foot tall.
On the lilac?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been there for a long time.
Yeah, and it's fine. Yeah, I mean, just cutting back a third of it is really going to help. I know it might seem like a big thing to do to take something that's 6 foot, but definitely just thin that out and let it flush back out some new growth.
So it'd be just like if I cut it back, it'll probably look like a bunch of sticks sticking out of the ground.
It might for the first season, but it'll overall be healthier and improve the shape and the life of the plant.
Because it's hanging over the sidewalk and everything.
Yep.
And can I cut? How do you cut a shoot out of that?
You could use a set of pruners or, you know, like loppers. You might, depending on how big it is, you might need to use like a handsaw, like a folding handsaw or something. Just get as low as you can. I know sometimes it's hard to get in there because there could be other branches around there, and we don't want to damage those. So just get as low as you can without damaging the stuff around it.
I'm talking about for my daughter to have Francis.
This oh, you're saying, so, yeah, so you want to dig some up and have her have another plant?
Right.
Yeah, so you just need to find a spot that you can get a shovel in. Maybe there's an offshoot that's, you know, hopefully a few inches away from the base, and just get as much of that root ball as you can and dig a piece out and plant it as soon as possible.
Any time?
You could do it now. Again, it's starting to get a little bit warm. So if you do it, I would do it real soon before our 90 degrees and hotter gets here. But I think it would be fine if you did it now. You could also wait till the fall when the weather starts cooling down.
All right. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thanks, Jim. The number to call is 314-436-7900. Jeannie, you're up next. Good morning.
Hi. Going back to the question about what you can use for a lawn instead of grass, on a postage stamp size lot in the city, just extremely small, what would you recommend for that, keeping something kind of low and maintenance-free?
Again, that Carex that we were talking about is a great option. There are mm-hmm. so many kinds of Carex. I want to say there's like 2,000 species of Carex. So mm-hmm. I'm sure you can find one that suits your condition. Far less than that are readily available around town. But we do have a lot of those cute little Carex that you can put in there. And again, if it's full sun versus shade, there's a lot of different kinds of ground covers that can be used. You know, there's ajuga, there's mm-hmm. pachysandra, pachysedum. There mm-hmm. is, if it's shade, there's a really great native ground cover that's wild ginger that's really great. Some of these things aren't necessarily walkable. So if you're wanting something that mm-hmm. you can walk on, you'll just mm-hmm. have to, you know, it depends on how much you're going to walk on it. Some ground covers are more rugged than others. But if you're looking for something that's a great lawn alternative that you can still kind of walk around on, I definitely think Carex is the way to go.
Okay. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you, Jeannie, for calling in at 314-436-7900. Sandra, you're on with Michelle.
Hi, good morning. I am calling because I have a heckberry tree in the yard. I'm not a fan of it, but it's there. And it's probably about 35, 40 years old. It's very big. And this is the first time this has happened. It started to lose some leaves right now, and they're yellowing and falling. Not many. The tree, by and large, looks really healthy. And, of course, it's had a lot of growth because of all the moisture we've had. I'm wondering if this is just a fungus.
Yeah, I mean, it likely is. Again, without seeing it, it's hard for me to really determine that. But that sounds very fungal to me. A lot of times when we have fungal issues, the leaves will yellow and start to fall off. If you're able to kind of get close, or, you know, I don't know how far away these leaves are on a big tree, but if there's any areas that you can get close to and kind of investigate the leaves and see if there's any spots, brown spots or spots around the edges or even curling of the leaves, that could be an indicator of a fungal. Again, we're seeing a lot of pest and disease stuff right now. A lot of these bugs can they're feeding on the leaves, so they can discolor the leaves. Leaves can fall off. Earlier in the show, I was talking about the gull that's on my oak leaf trees. Some of those leaves are turning brown and yellow and falling off in my yard. So it could be a pest that's causing it. But I would try to get, if you can, either look at the yellow leaves that have dropped and or look at some of the leaves that are still remaining and kind of investigate to see what that might look like. But fungal or some kind of pest is probably what is commonly happening right now. And if either one of those are the case, you probably just need to get through this season and keep your eye on it. Like in the case of my oak tree, I'm not going to do anything. I'm just kind of waiting and seeing. I'm cleaning up the mess that's left behind and hoping that it doesn't get worse. If it does get worse for you, I would definitely recommend getting an arborist out and kind of investigating and making sure there are other things that can be happening to trees, bacterial things that they might want to treat. Fungal stuff they don't always treat. If it is bacterial or if there is some other kind of problem, they might want to do a treatment or fertilization. So if it seems like, it becomes worse or it's affecting, a large portion of your canopy, then it might be worth getting an arborist out to investigate further.
Okay, that makes sense. There is fungus in the grass.
Yeah.
And I was told to just not worry about it because if we had a few 80-degree dry days, it would get better. And unfortunately, we still haven't really had dry and warm.
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing a lot in our cool season grass is that it's fungal. But once that warms up, that's not going to become a big issue. So, hopefully this fungus will leave us alone. But I would just watch it and just, kind of be patient and see what happens.
Question, because it is such a big tree, and I fret about the big trees because after the tornado in St. Louis, I saw how so many trees were uprooted.
Yeah.
And someone told me that here in Illinois, where I live, that shouldn't be as major a concern because we have a different soil. It's a very clay-like soil. Do you think that's some truth to that?
There might be. It's depending on how saturated the soil is and how rooted in your tree is. All of those things. There's a lot of factors that contribute to those trees falling over like that. And a lot of those were that our soil was super saturated, and a lot of those types of trees that just fall over. If you saw in the news, a lot of them were on like the hill strip out by the street where their roots weren't able to get really rooted in on one side. So that makes one side super weak. So there's just so many contributing factors to why and how trees fail or fall over. And it's especially with a big tree like that, that's high value or potential for damage. An arborist is always the way to go for me.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Thanks for calling in, Sandra. 314-436-7900 is the number to call. You have a little bit of time still to get your question in for Michelle Reeser-West at Pointer Landscaping. We'll continue with those phone calls in just a moment on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hotline on 104.1 FM, KMOX, the voice of St. Louis. Answering your questions this morning, Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping at 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Carol. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning. My question is about roses. What type of mulch would be good to put around rose bushes?
There's a lot, so many different types of mulches out there. The most common is, like a shredded oak mulch that's, you can get at most of our places, double ground mulch. I really like using in my own gardens something a little bit more broken down than that, something with maybe a little bit more organic matter. There's some a product out there that you can get at St. Louis Composting. It's called Forest Finds. It's kind of a mixture between compost and that like double ground type of mulch. And I like that a lot because it's adding some organic matter back in, but it's still a little bit chunky, so it can help from breaking down too quickly. There's also leaf compost or leaf mulch, it's sometimes called, that's just kind of broken down leaves. But those are kind of the three main types that I would, recommend to you. Roses definitely need some time to kind of dry out. So making sure that we're not, just like those trees and other things that we've been talking about keeping, during the growing season, when the rose is actively growing, keeping that base, a base right at where the stem meets the ground, clear from mulch is important. So just keeping that mulch a little bit further out from the crown of the plant. And that's just really mulches to help to, retain a little bit of moisture and to suppress weeds. So, just making sure that we're not overfilling that mulch or crowding the base of the rose is really more important than what type of mulch that you're using, I think.
Okay. The previous owner had put decorative gravel around it. And I know that's not a good thing to have there, so I'll have to try and get that out. Is there also, I'm used to mixing fertilizer into the soil for roses, and while that gravel's there, I can't do that. Is there any kind of a liquid fertilizer?
Sure, yeah. And roses are heavy feeders, right? They do need a lot of fertilizer. Most of the time, there's actually some drenches that you can use. That's like a liquid fertilizer, of different kinds. There's all different kinds. There's organic stuff. There's, stuff I'm sure that, something like Miracle-Gro or somebody would have. But you can just water it in. So, there's concentrated liquids that you can get at the store and mix that together and just slowly water it into the soil. And that way it's getting right down in there. It's not sitting on the surface. So I would kind of recommend doing something like that.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks, Carol, for calling in at 314-436-7900. Our next caller is Bill. You're on with Michelle Reeser-West. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm seeing a different side of spring since I had to come out to Albuquerque, New Mexico right now.
Well, that's quite a change.
Yeah, beautiful things. But anyway, on the edge of my new growth on my Concord grapes, the leaves are starting to curl up. And I was wondering if something's missing, or is it a fungus or what?
So, yeah, there's a lot of curling going on, and there's so many reasons that could be causing the curling. And again, so hard for me to tell or even, you know, try to diagnose. But here's some options for you, and you can investigate. So an option A is fungus, right? So that could be a big culprit right now. Fungus, you can normally see some kind of fruiting bodies of some kind. You can see some white powdery stuff if it's a powdery mildew. You can see dots on the leaves that are brown most of the time. So you're looking for some kind of evidence of fungus, of discoloration of some kind. The other thing that causes leaf curl is bugs of some kind, and those are typically easy to spot. Aphids can do that, which we're seeing a lot of right now. And spider mites can do it a little bit, but there are insects that can cause it. So the way that you look for that or decide if that's the cause is you go out and you investigate and you look for insects. And I'm always looking on the underside of the leaves because that's typically where it's happening. And then another reason for leaf curl could be pesticide overspray or some kind of chemical damage. So I'm not sure if you're using product in your lawn or anything like that, or you're close to a neighbor where something could have drifted and gotten on there that causes some leaf curl. And then the other common thing that causes leaf curl is nutrient deficiency. And the only way to tell if it's that is to get a soil test. So blindly fertilizing things, especially when you're growing something like grapes, is not typically recommended because grapes probably have a specific soil structure and needs that they want to grow the best. So so taking that soil sample and getting that tested to see if there is some type of nutrient deficiency is probably good for you anyway if you're trying to grow grapes or anything edible, because grapes can be a little picky about what they're growing in. So soil tests could be recommended too. So unfortunately, it's hard for me to sit here and tell you, but those are options, and just investigating and kind of going out and looking to see if you can determine any of those things might help.
I have Jim and Jan blackberries, and on some of the blackberries, it's like something has been attacking, like a fungus thing. All of a sudden, it'll be green, and then all of a sudden, like a week later, it might be turning yellow and whatever, and then the whole vine dies out.
Mm-hmm. That sounds fungal. Okay. It doesn't. That just sounds a little bit fungal to me, because that could happen with, again, you need to kind of look and see what those leaves look like and if there's any evidence of fungal issues on there. Blackberries can get overcrowded. I don't know if you've pruned those back in the dormant time or kind of thinned those out at all. But we are just like one of the biggest things right now is this fungal stuff on leaves and stems. So that might be the case. You're just going to have to do a little bit of investigating and see if you have anything when you look up close and see any other evidence of what's going on.
Okay, thank you very much for all your information.
Yeah, good luck.
Thanks, Bill, for calling in. We go next to Tom. Good morning, Tom.
Hi, I have an old swing set, part of an old swing set in my backyard that I was wanting to plant something viney to grow up on top of. And I was thinking grapes, but is there anything that's nice and low maintenance that would grow up over the top?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different vines out there. Depending on your sun requirements, you could. I love that you're doing this, by the way. I'm getting distracted by looking or visualizing your swing set and what we can plant on it. But you know, you could use it for edibles. There's a lot of edible things that you can grow right now. Like, well, we're getting a little late in the season for for peas or things like that, but you could use it for pole beans or sweet peas or things like that. Climbing rose would be kind of cool. We have a native honeysuckle vine that's pretty cool. That has different things. There's, if it's a little bit shady, you could do like a climbing hydrangea on there. Clematis is there's a bunch of different types of clematis that you could plant. And there's tons of annual vines too. If you go to your nurseries right now, there's tons of different types of annual vines that can be planted yearly. And sometimes annual vines can be more aggressive and will grow a lot more than more quickly over a season than our perennial vines. And you can cut them back every year. But, there's black-eyed Susan vines, there's hyacinth bean. There's so many different things that you could plant on it. I think that's a great idea, though. I love that you're doing it.
Sounds like it's time for a trip to the nursery.
I think it is. And also right now, nurseries are just having so many sales because we're past Memorial Day. So if y'all have time to get out to a nursery this weekend, they are all like just slashing prices to try to get rid of their products before the heat of the summer gets here. So
good tip.
Yep.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. The number to call, we've got one more segment to go. You can still get your question in from Michelle this morning at 314-436-7900. The Garden Hotline continues in just a moment. 104.1 FM, KMOX. Segment, last chance to get your question in for Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping on the Garden Hotline. We go now to Lori. Lori, you're up next with Michelle. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Hi, Michelle. Thank you. I have non-hardy hibiscus in pots on my back porch, and the leaves are turning yellow just nonstop. They're still flowering, but the leaves are turning yellow, and I just didn't know what I should be doing.
So a couple reasons why the hibiscus can have this happening is, one, the most common is just inconsistent watering, or just watering too much or watering too little. And all of this is just to say that the watering is an issue. So they like to be watered thoroughly, like really, really wet, and then to let that dry out for a bit and then water thoroughly again. They don't really love watering every day. A big drench to get it really, really, really wet and then letting it dry out and then doing that every few days as opposed to short waterings more frequently. They don't like it when they get dried out either, which also turns the leaves yellow. So it's very similar. So it's hard to tell if you're overwatering or underwatering. So coming up with a system that is, maybe 2 or 3 days that you're really drenching. Yeah, that you're drenching. And so now we're bringing in that rain component that we've had so much rain and you can't really control that. That is what it is. Hopefully the rain's going to slow down here soon and the heat of the summer is going to get here, which they also love more. They prefer the hot weather and we haven't had a lot of that either. And then they can also get mites and aphids, which we've been talking a lot about. So I would also check to see the underside of those leaves to see if there's any insect. Good. So really just, hopefully we can get some dry weather where it can dry out in between waterings. You might try a little bit of fertilizer to help it flush back out some new growth. Something as simple as getting some Miracle-Gro or something specific for tropicals or annuals and, letting them have a little bit of that to help push out some new growth. But really just if we can get some consistent weather, that might help.
Yeah. It's not happening right now.
But the good thing about the hibiscus is they will flush out new leaves pretty quickly. So if we can get that under control, then you should be fine for the rest of the season.
Okay. My daughter's having the same problem with hers on the inside of her house. So I will pass that on to her.
All right. Good luck.
All right. Thanks a lot. All right.
Thanks for the question, Lori. Next, we have Marianne. Good morning, Marianne.
Hi. I just got a garden tip that I got from a lady from Saving and Produce a long time ago, and I just want to share it. I was having trouble when I would plant my flowers in the pot, and I'll be darned, a day later, these doggone squirrels would get in there and just pull up those plants. And she said you take pea rock or gravel rock, and after you plant them in the pot, you just sprinkle them with the pea rock or gravel rock on top of the soil, and those squirrels will not touch them. I mean, it works. I've done it for years. I just thought I'd share that.
Well, thank you for calling in with that tip. I know that we talk about squirrels on here a lot, and squirrels are my nemesis for sure. And, you know, I actually think this is a great tip, and I did this for a client a few weeks ago when we were installing annuals, that she had some three pots that the squirrels were constantly getting into, and we did some small gravel around the top of it, and has not had a problem with it since then. So great tip, and appreciate calling in.
Thank you. What kind of rock did you say?
She said pea gravel.
Okay.
You know, here's the thing about pea gravel is I always thought it was called pea gravel because it was the size of a pea, and it's just pea gravel because of the size, but there's A gravel, there's B gravel, and it's just whatever size it is.
It goes all the way up to P?
Apparently so. I bet it's even smaller.
Go to Z?
But it's not P-E-A gravel, it's
that's
just pea gravel.
That's what I thought it would be.
No.
Okay.
Just a little tip for you guys out there.
You learn something new every day on the show, right? All right, final thoughts, Michelle. We have 1 minute left.
1 minute. It's Father's Day. You know, a lot of dads out there that are going to be gardening or like to be out in the garden. So, you know, don't forget about our dads. And maybe they want you to go out and garden with them. That might be a fun thing to do for your dad on Father's Day. My dad was not a gardener, and he's no longer with us. He actually, I don't remember him being outside much at all. But my stepdad loves to garden, and he piddles around with his vegetables and stuff. So just happy Father's Day to everybody
out
there.
Happy Father's Day. My dad actually is a pretty good gardener.
Yeah.
Tomatoes are delicious.
Nice.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline on 104.1 FM, KMOX, the voice of St. Louis. Thanks to Michelle Reeser-West. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep, I'll be here.
All right. I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide. Or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball. The game's official home for games is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.